And it's Steve Tasker who has been all over the field.
Kind of unique. He was kind of a dual role player for you.
Steve.
A balloon.
Steve. A blimp. We're not even in the stratosphere of normalcy. All right, rocking and rolling here on a Friday. Chris Brown, Steve Tasker, One Bills Live is the show. Here until 3. Plenty of Bills news to discuss as we get ready for Bills Colts on Sunday. Full show as always on a Friday. Oof, Greg Cosell coming your way in hour number 2, as well as the man who will call the game on CBS. One Kevin Harlan will be joining us in the final half hour of the show.
He's big. That's a big name to be doing a Bill. Well, it's a Bills Colts game, so there's two teams that
there's
are.
There's a little cachet to this matchup.
There is, and Kevin Harlan doing the game speaks to that. Absolutely.
So he'll be doing the game with Trent Green, and so we'll catch up with Kevin in the second hour of the program. Get his feelings on that. What he thinks of the AFC landscape, which is a jumbled mess right now. There is one thing that has emerged as a constant, at least for the interim, and it is the New England Patriots, Steve. I didn't really intend to begin the show this way, but there's also a part of me that just wants to cover it and move on. They won another game last night, Thursday Night Football. They've now won 5 in a row, and they beat the Falcons 25-0. Every quarterback that entered the game for Atlanta threw an interception.
Yeah.
Matt Ryan, the starter, obviously threw one or two. Josh Rosen made an appearance.
Went 1 for 3.
Threw a pick.
And a pick.
Then Felipe Franks comes in.
Franks. 0 for 1.
The Florida product.
For 0 yards, 0 touchdowns, and 1 interception.
That's right.
For a 0.0.
He only got
zero
one
rating.
Throw.
He got a
0.0.
Patriots
now look,
are really good defensively.
The Falcons are far from a juggernaut, but you look at the Atlanta team. They have trouble getting lined up. They make ill-advised decisions. They commit some penalties. The Patriots make you pay every single time. They win 80% of their games based on the opponent's screw-ups.
Right.
Because they don't screw up in the same way.
And I'll tell you what, Matt Ryan looks
old.
Oof. That old is one thing.
I think he's 37 now.
He looked older than me. I mean, he could not avoid the rush at all. At all.
Matt Ryan is 36.
He could not avoid the rush at all, and the Patriots made him pay.
Well, I remember when, who did we have on earlier in the week? I cannot remember who it was, but it was Kyle Brandt. I said, I think Matthew Judon may prove to be the best defensive free agent signing of this past offseason. I don't know if you could have a guy fit a defensive scheme any better than him. And I think he's got 10.5 sacks now in 11 games.
Their defense is playing extremely well. And they are always in position. They always seem to be breaking on the ball. They play with real confidence in what they're doing. And I think that's the thing that sets their defense apart. Certainly they've got good players. But I think the attitude their defenders play with is as much about their preparation as anything. Now, they really come in confident about what they're doing defensively, and they play like that.
People are going gaga for Mac Jones. I'm one to pump the brakes on that. Yes, he's got back-to-back games of 80% completion. But, you know, what are we doing here? We're throwing passes within 5 yards of the line of scrimmage every single time, with a few exceptions. But for the most part, that is why his completion percentage is as high as it is. I'm not trying to knock the kid. I'm just saying he's a product of what their system is.
He still
has to make the right decisions, know where he's going with the football, but it's not high degree of difficulty from a physical standpoint because A five-yard pass is a lot easier to complete, you know, than a 40 or a 50-yard one.
Right. He doesn't push the ball down the field consistently, but you got to tip your hat to the Patriots and the way they've handled him. Their offense is built, in my opinion, the Patriots have done as much to support Mac Jones as the Baltimore Ravens did to support Lamar Jackson. They had to, like, go all in with Lamar Jackson. I mean, they got receivers who could block, you know, that kind of thing in free agency. They went and did that. All of the things that they've done have been about Lamar and bringing him along. The Patriots, same thing. They brought Mac Jones in, knew what he could do and do well, gave him some things, and now, you know, what he can do now is expanding and expanding and expanding week in, week out. So now, by the end of the season, you know, they're a tough out.
Yeah.
They're a really good foot. Now, defensively, they knew they were going to need a running game, and they knew they were going to put a defense together. They brought some guys back. Van Noy came back and did all that. All these guys came back. Karras came back. These four guys came back from Miami after going down, signing at big deals, getting financially secure for their families, and then come back and playing for fun for New England.
Yeah.
And they're playing extremely well defensively. And, you know, Mac Jones, let's face it, he would have won that game last night with a field goal.
Yeah. He only threw one touchdown pass.
Yeah. They had two defensive touchdowns.
The defense had the other.
One defensive touchdown.
Had the other one.
The defense had a bunch, like three picks,
and
obviously.
Nick Folk
four picks.
A bunch of field goals. So, I'm just telling you, 3 weeks from now, I want to see Mac Jones picked off by this Bills defense like three times with all three of them going back for touchdowns. That would get everybody to shut the hell up about Mac Jones, because every national talk show, Sports Center, Fox Sports, wherever you want to turn, they're crowning this kid already.
Yeah.
It's like, come on with that. What is that?
Well,
here's the latest narrative, Steve. Now I'm getting warmed up here. This is the latest narrative. Saw this one this morning.
I can see it coming.
Oh, this defense is playing like a former Patriots defense of old. And this young quarterback is playing like an young quarterback, getting his feet wet and coming along slowly but surely. And so now they're comparing the 2021 Patriots to the 2001 Patriots. When Brady, as a second-year player, became a first-year starter, taking over for Bledsoe, the defense was very good for the Patriots that year. So you want to draw those parallels, that's fine. But, man, they're all ready to crown Mac Jones. Look, I got respect for him. He's done a nice job. He's worked hard. Good for him. He's playing well. But come on. It's like it's the second coming. What are we doing?
Yeah.
I mean, we're completely off the rails here.
Well, I'll say this, and it's interesting, too. I mean, think about it. How good would this Patriots team be with a veteran quarterback that could throw? Mac's got a good arm, not a great arm. And they don't push the ball down the field. They got a good running. I mean, right now, Mac Jones is riding the wave. It'll be interesting to see if he gets good enough, fast enough, because sooner or later in the playoffs, you're gonna have to beat a team. Your quarterback's going to have to beat you, win for you. And I don't know if he's there. Now, we've seen it before. Patriots win games every kind of way. They may put him in a position or may have a plan for never letting it come down to Mac Jones making a play.
Yeah.
Because right now it has never come down to Mac Jones making a play to win a game for him. And if it has, he has not come through for him. So he's good. They're handling. They should write a book on how this has gone with him and how well he's playing, because it's rare that you see. I mean, think about that 2018 class. You know, Bills handled Josh okay. It took him a year or two, three to get there.
Well, and they built it well around him.
And Lamar, same thing. But everybody else, Baker has struggled. Sam Darnold is with the Carolina Panthers now.
Baker Mayfield's the interesting case, because the Browns did try to build it around him the right way. I thought, and now that doesn't remove the fact that they were changing coaches left and right.
Yeah.
I mean, what's he in? He's on his third system in 4 years now.
It's fourth head coach, yeah.
Yeah. So
it was.
I think that is
wait,
what.
Maybe
is,
not. Maybe not. Maybe not. It was.
It's Stefanski now.
It was
Hugh Freddie Kitchens.
Hugh Jackson.
Yeah.
Freddie Kitchens and Jansky.
No. He was already gone. He was before Hugh Jackson. You're thinking of Chudzinski or whatever?
Yeah, Chudzinski was way before that.
Chud, yeah.
So it was Hugh Jackson, Freddie Kitchens, and now Stefanski.
Yeah.
Third head coach. Second system. Kitchens was the same OC. Guy. So, yeah,
It's interesting. But talk all the time here about player development. Patriots are very good at that.
And they are.
Steelers are very good at that. Ravens are very good at that. Those are the teams that win perennially more often than not.
Yeah.
If you have player development, you're in good shape because you're going to make good players even better. And, you know, with the margin so tight in this league, as Steve talks about all the time, it can make the difference between winning and losing football.
Particularly at the end of the season as opposed to where you were at the beginning of the season.
Yeah.
And that's where the Bills have been the last couple of years. That's where the Patriots have always been under Bill Belichick as well.
Twitter conversation today, you know what it is. It's OBL Friday Fan Mailbag. So any questions you have on the NFL or the Bills, fire them off to us. Steve and I will do our best to answer those. It is also Tailgate Friday. We got a home game, people. We need to know your plans for your tailgate this weekend. So if you've got something interesting on your menu, or maybe you have family in early for the Thanksgiving holiday, how many extra people you got at your tailgate, hit up One Bills Live and send in your tailgate plans. We'd love to hear them. Or you can call in if you want to. 803-0550, 1-888-550-2550. Bills news today, the most recent news is as follows. Bobby Hart, who was with this team during training camp, was on the roster for a little bit, on the practice squad for a little bit, then released. He is back with the club, signed to the 53-man roster today. He was most recently with the Titans. They released him earlier this week. So here he is. And I think, if anything, Steve, this sends a strong indication that Spencer Brown is not going to be available on Sunday. We don't know that for sure yet. All Coach McDermott would say this morning when he spoke with the media on his Friday press conference was that he remains in the COVID protocol or COVID reserve list. So, as does Star Latulele. So you see this kind of a move. They have an open roster spot because when you put Brown and Latulele on COVID reserve, that opens up two active roster spots. They used one of those to put Bobby Hart on the roster. It's a depth move. I don't anticipate him being in the lineup in any way, shape, or form on Sunday. He's, in case of emergency, break glass kind of addition here this week as far as I'm concerned.
Right. Bobby Hart's been passed around more than an offering plate in the church. So he's been on three. This is his third. No, this is his second trip with the Bills this season.
That's
he was
correct.
With us in the preseason. Then he goes to Cincinnati. Then now he's with Tennessee. Now he's back to Buffalo. Yeah, I think I would think he's in as a safety net because if they can give him, he'll know the language or at least be able to remember back what the language was and what he's supposed to do.
He knows the system.
But I don't think, you're not going to see Bobby Hart go out there and take opening day, reps right off the top, I would think. Because if he was good enough to do that, you wouldn't have Ryan Bates or Butker or any of these guys, Cody Ford, you wouldn't have any of these guys on your roster because Bobby Hart would be better than them at what. So I think those guys will probably play ahead of him. Tommy Doyle, whatever. So
yeah, you have Tommy Doyle, Jameel Douglas, Cody Ford, Ryan Bates. Those are your main backups. And one of them is going to have to start presumably at right guard. We're assuming that the Bills will go back to much of what we saw when Spencer Brown was out with the back injury against Jacksonville and Miami, which was Darrell Williams at right tackle, and they had Cody Ford at right guard. We'll see if that continues on Sunday.
Right. It's interesting, too. We got some of this feedback on our Twitter question on the Friday fan mailbag. People are asking, do you think they'll go back under center like they did against the Jets because they were so successful doing it and it really made the run game a threat, even though they didn't run it. They ended up running it a lot. I don't know. That's a good question. I certainly think that's in the mix. It's on the table. They were successful with it. It did set them up to have Josh with some space to throw the football.
Yep.
But they also went heavy. When I say heavy, I mean they put big guys on the field, like tight ends and fullbacks and extra offensive linemen on the field in order to make it happen. And that means like Cole Beasley and, you know, Emmanuel Sanders and, you know, all some of these guys are sitting down so that they can do that. Is that, which means there are fewer options in the passing game. So it's a, you know, risk-reward kind of thing. Maybe Josh has more time to throw it, but fewer guys to throw it to. Yeah. That's the idea. And so, yeah, maybe they can do that. I know this Colts team has struggled against the pass.
Giving up more passing touchdowns than any team in football, yeah. 23.
And both these quarterbacks are really good at throwing it down the field. So, you know, there's that. They may use play action to get a little more space in the back end for their receivers. But like I said, they used big bodies up front to threaten the run, and that's what really made the play action work.
Right.
If you try and play action out of, you know, 10 personnel, that threat's not so great.
We also learned today from Coach McDermott that Tremaine Edmonds is practicing for the first time this week on a limited basis today. And we anticipate the injury report will be out before we're off the air, so we'll pass that along to you when we get it. Did not practice Wednesday, did not practice Thursday, but participated on a limited basis today, which I think means he at least has a chance to play on Sunday. You know, we're all guessing here. In all likelihood, he's probably listed as questionable.
Right.
Having only a partial day of practice the entire week, and they err on the side of caution with these soft tissue injuries.
You want to try and get him on the field against the Colts or save him for three extra days and get him on Thursday?
Well, yeah, you have to believe that with two games in 5 days and him coming off an injury, they are definitely weighing that into the equation
right
here.
And I don't know whether, you know, how close he is, but
you could argue,
yeah,
you could argue this game's more important though because it's an AFC conference game.
Yeah.
You know, play him this week. If he tweaks it again, he sits next week, and he essentially
gets
Thursday 2 weeks.
Gets the bye week. Yeah, I get it. Yeah, who knows? It all comes down to if can he play or can he not play.
Right.
And if he can, he needs to go. And if he can't, he probably – and then it's a race to see if he can get ready for Thursday.
Yeah. And I'm telling you, I wouldn't mind having that speed on the field with Jonathan Taylor running the football.
Tremaine
can cover some ground and cut off angles.
Well, it's the same thing on Thursday, too, with, you know
– Kamara,
with
yeah.
Alvin Kamara and the Saints. So, I don't know. We're in the middle of an injury swoon here and a little rash of injuries and COVID.
Yep.
So the Bills are undermanned. It's amazing how much that can shake your confidence in what they're going to be able to do on the field.
Yeah.
I mean, this without Spencer Brown, without Starlo Tulele, that casts doubt, and given that they're playing the Colts and what they can do well, it casts doubt on their ability to run off and leave these guys for sure.
Yeah.
I think this is going to be a really good football game.
I think it could be pretty tight. The odds makers had it at 7.5. Bills as 7.5-point favorites. Be interesting to see if that line moved here as the week wore on, knowing that Spencer Brown and Starlo Tulele remain on the COVID reserve list. We'll have to take a look at that when we get a chance to do so. The NFL has provided some specificity, shall we say, to the taunting rule. They are now telling NFL teams that if you posture toward a sideline, presumably the opposing sideline, after making a play, it counts as taunting. So the whole Cassius Marsh debacle with Tony Corrente, which Corrente said, well, he was – you know, saying stuff to the opposing sideline, so that's why I threw the flag. That is now suddenly being included in the realm of taunting. Only took him a couple of weeks to figure that one out. So good on you, NFL officiator. Well,
at least they articulated it for all of us. And
so that will now be a thing. So you make a big play near the opposing sideline, you better get up and be facing your team's sideline immediately.
Is still
we're really getting out in the weeds here.
Yeah.
There's in favor
of the taunting.
There's a ton
of subjectivity in this. That's the problem.
Yeah, I'm in favor of the taunting, calling it because I don't like seeing young kids copying the pros and, you know, getting in each other's faces. There's just not any place for that in youth sports, and it's infiltrated it. You know, having two kids that were youth sport athletes, I saw it probably more than I'd like. So I get what the league's trying to do. I'm in favor of it, but we're getting way out in the weeds here now with some of these additions and addendums.
And, you know, people are asking, you remember Josh Allen got sacked in the Jacksonville game, and the guy did this kind of, I don't know, some sort of...
Oh, he went into a Zen pose.
A Zen pose with his, you know...
Taven Bryan,
yeah, whatever. And he did it right in front of Josh.
Yeah.
And a lot... I was like...
Where's the taunt for that?
And, the official was just in a mood, I guess, and decided not... And that's what it is. It's subjective to whatever the official sees or thinks he sees or whatever. And they just said, nah, I'll let that slide. And... Okay. All right.
Guess it's going to be inconsistent.
But you're going to call that and then not that? And that's where it's So we're
That's why it's messy.
Still ironing this out. I fans are going to have to get used to it. We're going to have to see it called a ton and get a handle on this, that, and the other. And we'll, you know, so that it gets to I've said it a million times. When all of us look at it and say, yeah, okay, that should be called because it's always been called now. They're all calling that. That's needing to be called. Then we're okay with it. It's the problem. The problem is like, what? You know, even when they start protecting quarterbacks, right, roughing the passer this, roughing the passer that. Now it's like our gauge for roughing the passer has like dropped considerably. It used to be, man, you could clothesline that joker. And they did.
Yeah,
I mean, whacking him up in the head with an open arm. I mean, it was no holds barred. And now we're all our tolerance is way down here compared to that. So we'll get there with this taunting. Yeah. I just don't know how long it's going to take.
And Steve, inadvertently, you answered the first question from the Fan Friday mailbag, which was from Herb, who said, Steve, why when 96 sacked Josh and knelt and prayed over him during the Jags game, a taunting penalty wasn't called?
The referee was in a mood.
Chose not to.
Not to call it. That's it. There's no other explanation for it.
That was a singular decision. Nick asks, I think the Pats as a team are for real, but isn't the Mac Jones hype a little premature? Thank you, Nick. Thank you. I am on that train. He literally checked everything down against the Falcons. That's a fine strategy if it works, but if it doesn't, but it doesn't show you anything about the QB himself.
All right, let me say this.
They're just having to manage games, basically.
Yeah, Jess, listen, I get it. It's a little, you know, and we in Buffalo here are a little sensitive to what goes on in New
England. Yeah, I'll admit that. I'm hypersensitive to it.
But if any team had a quarterback playing as well as Mac Jones is as a rookie right out of the gate, they'd be pretty excited, no question about it. They have the Patriot fans have every reason to be super excited about his future. I don't know how high the ceiling is, but the floor is really high.
Yes.
The floor is high for Mac Jones. The ceiling, not as high as it is for Zach Wilson or some of the other guys or, you know, Trey Lance or you go down the list. But the floor is really high. And he went to a place that knows how to get the most out of him, and that's what we're seeing. And, you know, so if any rookie quarterback for any other team was having the kind of season that Mac Jones is, we'd be going crazy. Last year, Justin Herbert pops out of the gate, and he looks like an NFL quarterback because he's grabbing big yards. He's gunning the ball in there. He's got some physical traits that allowed the Chargers last year to do some things with him the Patriots can't do with Mac Jones. But, you know, Patriots are winning games. So – you know, tip your hat to him. And I get it. I mean, Mac Jones is, he's a game manager, no question. But he's playing really well for a very young quarterback.
Rachel asks, do you think the under the center plays are here to stay, or was that just a one-time thing for our matchup against the Jets?
I do not know.
I don't know either, but I think we'll see it again.
I think we will too.
I'm not saying every week, but I think most weeks it will be incorporated in some way, shape, or form to varying degrees of frequency. Like, there might be a week where it makes a lot of sense and it's 30% of the snaps.
Right.
There might be other weeks where it makes zero sense and they don't use it at all.
Right. It's old school. I mean, no question about it. Old school. And it does take advantage of some things that Josh does really well, most notably ball handling. He's really good handling the ball in the backfield, handing it off, keeping it,
play faking,
hiding it, you know, tucking it and running, bootlegging.
He had the cameraman fooled last week.
Yeah, he's really good at it, and it does take advantage of that. But that's a little old school, and the Bills, it's a big jump backwards from where they usually run their offense, you know, 60% passes to go under center 70% of the time. That was a big jump last week, and I think it caught the Jets somewhat off guard.
Yeah, I get it.
I don't know that it would catch the Colts that often this week.
Thomas asks, there have been a few games this year that for me have caused concern. Just an uneasy feeling. I'm having that again. Shuffling the O-line, COVID, and every game Indy plays is a playoff game. I'm concerned that Indy may want and need this game more. Can you help me feel better? Well, your feelings are right. This game does mean a lot more to the Colts in terms of playoff chances. I was looking online at playoff odds, and you can punch in, you know, if this team wins, how much is their playoff chances enhanced? If the Colts win on Sunday here in Buffalo, their playoff percentage goes from like 14% to 50. So they become like a 50-50 shot to make the playoffs if they win this week's game. If they don't, their percentage goes way down. Six losses leaves you with very little margin for error, even in a 17-game season.
Right. The Bills have got, by virtue of one-loss records of their opponents, they got a pretty easy schedule going down the road. But that is changing as the Patriots keep winning and some of these other teams get some wins under their belt. Their win percentage is going to climb a little bit, I would think. But you're playing a desperate football team. It's week 11. I mean, this is like we're coming. I don't even think this is just barely past halfway now. It used to be week 11 is like, wow, we're
coming
deep
down the stretch.
We're deep into it, right? Yeah. And we still are. I mean, technically, but man, oh man, it feels differently with that extra game
it
in there
does.
And an extra playoffs team. Nothing's going to be decided, and there's going to be a lot of teams in the conversation in weeks 16, 17, and 18 about getting in or out of the playoffs.
The only way I can try to make Thomas feel a little bit better is the Colts' five wins are against opponents whose combined record is 12-34. Now, the Bills haven't exactly played juggernauts either for much of the season, but if you need something to hang your hat on, that's something I can offer you. 12-34 is the record of the five teams that the Colts have beaten
this
season.
And they were in a dogfight last week against Jacksonville, just like the Bills, the team that beat the Bills.
They basically won it on a block punt.
Right, they won it on a block punt. So Jacksonville's playing better or Indianapolis is playing down to the level of their competition, whichever you want to call it. They struggled to beat a team that just barely beat the Bills. And we all know how poorly the Bills played in that game. Unfortunately, the Bills look like they're going to have mostly the same lineup on the offensive line as that game in Jacksonville coming into this weekend. So we'll see how much they can do to improve their fortunes when an offensive line that got manhandled by Jacksonville.
Break time for us here. When we come back, we'll get you some comment from some of the players after practice, most notably Dawson Knox, Micah Hyde, Stephon Diggs, as they now prepare for Sunday's game that's just 48 hours away. That's coming up next here on One Bills Live, presented by Kaleida Health. It's Buffalo Bills Radio. All right, welcome back to One Bills Live. Chris Brown, Steve Tasker with you. As we motor our way to the weekend and Bills-Colts, and we want to pass along some thoughts from the players on the upcoming matchup. They were addressing the media after practice. Dawson Knox obviously was on this roster last year when the Bills played the Colts in the wild card round here in Orchard Park, a game won by the Bills 27-24. And here is Knox on having some measure of familiarity with the Colts because of that meeting.
Anytime you play a team recently, it's going to help. Just, we got a feel for them recently. We kind of know their personnel after having played them, a few months ago. But at the same time, you know, everything changes, even week to week. Like, a lot can change even with divisional opponents. You know, we'll play everybody in our division twice a year, obviously, and sometimes we can see a lot of things change. So you can't go into the game expecting them to be the same team that they were a few months or, I don't know, 8 or 9 months ago that they are now. But it does help watching some of that film and just kind of reassuring ourselves that we know where to be and we know how they're going to play it.
So, yeah, I think you mapped that out pretty effectively in terms of what you know and don't know. For the defense, it's going to be much different because, obviously, there's a different quarterback playing with a much bigger arm who can reach most areas of the football field, which was not the case with Phillip Rivers last year.
Right, and that's there are some things you can get from personnel and what they do and what they don't do, but you know this team in Indianapolis is going to be as different as the Bills are from last year. And perhaps even more so because I got a different guy pulling the trigger. Carson Wentz is an athlete. Phillip Rivers was a thrower. Now, Carson Wentz is a thrower as well, but he's got that athletic ability. You know, another year with Jonathan Taylor, all of that stuff. I mean, they were tough out last year. The Colts were – that game was a real good football game. And it's going to take a supreme effort for the Bills to bounce back, particularly given their COVID problems and injuries that they're facing as well. So yeah. It's going to be a completely different kind of matchup than it was a year ago. But still, going back and looking at the film gives you some confidence walking on the field saying, okay, at least I got a feel for what this team is about.
Yeah, maybe the most important thing is the fact that they have a handle on what Jonathan Taylor can and cannot do as a ball carrier. They held him to 78 yards in that playoff game last year. So at least they know what's coming at them because sometimes you face some player – oh, you hear that he's fast, and then you get on the field, and you're like, oh, dang, we got to make some adjustments here. I got to take a different angle to the ball when he's carrying it. You know what I mean? It's a shock right. that you have to kind of get adjusted to. So I think it's good that they faced him last year. Speaking of Taylor and the run game, this is another physical matchup at the line of scrimmage with this Colts offensive line in particular. And Micah Hyde addressed the physicality that the Colts bring to the game.
Starts with their run game. I think they understand that to be successful in this league, you got to have a run game. So, you know, that's what they do. They give the ball to 28 and they let him work. They got a good offensive line. They got, you know, big physical tight ends and receivers. They're a physical ball club. You throw in the play calling and stuff like that. I mean, they do such an awesome job setting up plays and, you know, working plays with other plays. And, you know, it may look the same to the defense, but there may be something they switch up. So, just for sure a physical unit.
Not a surprising comment from Micah Hyde. He recognizes it. The question is, are they going to be able to match that physicality? They were the more physical team last week against the Jets. Now you got to do it again against a better front.
Right. This front's better than the Jets front, and they've got more to play for, and they've probably coming in here, a number of those guys, like we've talked about, they're watching that film from last year too, and they're coming in more highly motivated. So you have to watch it. I mean, it's crazy not to watch that film. I don't know how much it helps you tactically, but it does help you watching a guy and what he's made of. You know, you kind of get a feel for how a guy's thinking when you see him play. And you get a kind of football player he is emotionally and whether he's going to be chippy and be one of those guys that, oh, my gosh, this is going to be a long day with this guy, right? Yeah. Some of that goes on. You kind of evaluate the guy and refresh your memory about what it was like to play against him, and sometimes that's good prep.
Stephon Diggs got off to a fast start last week as the offense, both Brian Daboll and Josh Allen, made a point to get him involved early, but Diggs addresses the importance of getting off to a fast start as a team.
Part of being like a pressure cooker, as far as like when you get off to that fast start, it put pressures on their offense to score. You know what I'm saying? And then we have that defense that tries to win the turnover ratio and puts put their offense in bad spots. So as an offense, we're trying to score fast, but not that fast, whereas our defense doesn't get a rest. But, you know, as an offense, just being explosive and being us. I mean, I feel like we can put up a lot of points. We can score points. We got a lot of playmakers. We got a lot of depth. It's just all about putting it all together. You know what I'm saying? They talk about us being one of the most complete teams, and I feel like what's the use of being a complete team if you're not showing it day in and day out? And it kind of all starts in practice. So we just kind of like steady on that grind. You know what I'm saying? Last week was an okay week for us. You know what I'm saying? We got to get back on it, and you know we face another challenge this week, and I look forward to it.
So, I mean, again, these guys can kind of encapsulate things pretty well for the fans to understand. I mean, they just have to keep on keeping on. They know they're a good team, but if you don't show it through the course of the week and prepare properly, you're probably not going to demonstrate it on a Sunday, especially against a team that has a pretty good roster top to bottom themselves in the Colts. I don't know.
Yeah, you're right. Part of being a complete team is being able to do it every week, is being consistent. Yeah. You know, and the roller, they've been on it. Let's face it. I think you can make a case for this, and I go back to week one. Pittsburgh was readier emotionally. The Tennessee game, you say what you want, it was a crappy day out. And, you know, you slip on a quarterback sneak where you feel like you're going to convert that if you don't fall down. And he did. He fell down. That's the game. And then, of course, the Jacksonville debacle where they show up as a number one scoring offense in the league and put up 6 points against a team that's got one win. So this roller coaster is the best argument. Those flat areas are the best argument for this team maybe not being a complete team because they don't put it together every single Sunday. Now, great teams win when they don't play their best. This team's done that as well. Like, yeah. They beat Miami like that. And they did it a number of times last year as well. I can't remember every game, but, you know, they
beat the Jets 18-10.
Right. But this year, I mean, they took Washington to the woodshed. They took Houston to the woodshed. They took Miami to the woodshed. And I think those games do as much to hurt them in these games that they go down as anything because they think, well, golly, these teams were pounding these teams.
Yeah.
This is easy. And that's when you become a team that's not consistent.
Yeah, you let your guard down. Fall into bad habits. 803-0550, the number to call. Let's go to the phones where Mike in Jamestown is waiting. Mike, what do you have for us? You're on One Bills Live.
Yeah, fellas, I was just wondering what the chance that you thought we might see Tommy Doyle at guard or tackle. And it seems like every year we hear about how much they have confidence in Ryan Bates and how much they like Ryan Bates, but whenever somebody goes down, we never see him get the start. I was just wondering what your thoughts were on that.
Okay, Mike. Thanks for the call. Yeah, I mean, Tommy Doyle, as Steve pointed out on the show yesterday, came in for one snap at left tackle when Deion Dawkins got dinged and had to come out of the game with the athletic trainers that tended to him on the field, and he gave up a sack. It's one snap. He's coming off the bench cold. That's not an easy situation. But I think the thing we have to remember is coaches favor players that they believe they can trust out on the field. Trust is the most important thing, especially at this level, because winning is the ultimate goal. They need to be able to put people out on the field that they trust implicitly to execute effectively, consistently, and more often than anybody you have standing on the sidelines next to you. And those are the guys they're going to pick to play the game. Good, better, for, you know, better or worse. And so because of that, I don't know if Tommy Doyle has built up enough of a resume for this coaching staff to say, you know what, I trust him. He's going to play guard the whole game today. I just don't think he's there yet.
Yeah, obviously he's not because there's a rookie on the field that has done that, and that's Spencer Brown. Doyle's not there yet for whatever reason. Neither's Ryan Bates for that matter. He hasn't been one of those guys, and Bates is known for his versatility. He can play all five spots, but you don't see him first off the bench coming in. That's when we talk about it all the time. The coaching staff watches these guys all day, every day, and they know what they can do well and what they can't do well, where they've coached him and where the guy's gotten better and where he still needs to be coached and where he have to keep coaching the guy because he's not getting better, that kind of stuff. And, you know, and it's, believe me, the coaching staff's got skin in this game. So they're trying to their best to make the best decision for the team. And if these players aren't a part of it, you know, you end up signing guys like Bobby Hart off the practice squad of another team. I mean, if you see Bobby, this is the thing that I can't understand. If Bobby Hart gets signed and he's the guy that goes in the game ahead of these other guys, why isn't he here and there on somebody else's practice
squad? Well, that's why I would be very surprised to see him
right
starting. I think he is an in-case-of-emergency break glass guy on the roster right now.
I think so, too, but we'll see.
Yeah. Break time for us here. When we come back, we'll take some more of your phone calls. Jimmy in Kansas City. Brad in – oh, you've got Tailgate Friday as well. Sorry. But if we have time, we'll get to some of these other phone calls as well. Coming up next here on One Bills Live, presented by Kaleida Health, it's Buffalo Bills Radio. All All right, time for a little Tailgate Friday presented by Highmark Blue Cross Blue Shield of Western New York, the official health plan of the Buffalo Bills, as we check in on some of your submissions for your tailgating plans this weekend. Jack says this week in the lot, we'll be frying eggs, grilling up steaks with Roadhouse seasoning, zesty grilled breakfast potatoes with peppers and onions, and grilled Texas toast. Debating on whether to make a horseradish hollandaise sauce to top it off. It'll be a breakfast fit for a tailgate king. I could not agree more. Steak and eggs is underrated. I'm just saying. You want to get your protein for the day? Start with steak and eggs. That'll get you going.
Yeah, good stuff.
I got to tell you, breakfast might be my favorite meal of the day. I'm serious. Especially when you have a hot breakfast. Come on now.
Yeah.
Breakfast potatoes with like some onions mixed in there.
I'm not a breakfast potato guy. I'm a hash brown guy.
Well, believe me. Anything potato
home
under
fries
the sun for
don't
breakfast,
do it for me. Hash browns do.
I don't discriminate. Yeah, if it's a potato and it's for breakfast,
yeah,
I am eating it.
I love potatoes, that's for sure. Yeah. And I'm an egg guy too.
Mm. I can't do sunny side up. I can't do it.
I go over easy.
I can't do it.
Okay.
I got to go with the fried eggs. Got to go over hard or scramble them up. I can't. I don't like stuff running all over my plate.
You can't really miss with scrambled.
Stacy is saying it's our annual Bills Giving tailgate. So it looks like the family is in with Stacy. So that should be a large Thanksgiving turkey focused feast at their tailgate spot this weekend in the lots. And from the Bruner, wings, pizza logs pregame, then cheddar bacon sliders postgame before the ride home. Got to be careful not to eat too many of those cheddar bacon sliders unless you live pretty close to the stadium. You know what I'm saying?
That sounds good.
It's always a risk. It sounds delicious.
Yeah, the sliders sound really good.
You just got to know your own digestive tract before you embark on that. So there's an awful lot of hot sauce, an awful lot of grease, and an awful lot of cheese. Got to be careful. Got to be careful out there. All right, that's Tailgate Friday.
Give me two.
That's Tailgate Friday, presented by Highmark Blue Cross Blue Shield of Western New York, the official health plan of the Buffalo Bills. We go back to the phones, and we talk to Jimmy in Kansas City. What do you have for us, Jimmy?
Hey, guys. Hey, just to go back, I agree with you guys on breakfast. But what's better than breakfast is breakfast for dinner.
Amen.
So,
yeah.
Yes. So, yeah. You know, over easy egg on top of French toast is to die for. Mm. Going back to earlier what you guys were talking about, how the team kind of goes up and down, kind of week to week, kind of haven't found that consistency yet. And I'm kind of, might butcher the quote a little bit, but Tim Tebow said, hard work will beat talent when talent doesn't work hard. And I think our players and sometimes the coaches kind of fall in that trap. You know, we'll have a great outing and everything's riding high, and then, you know, then you just have a Jacksonville. Or, you have, I'm not mad against the play with Tennessee. I think it was a great call to go for it. But what I would have loved to see, too, is I believe we still had a timeout. Take a timeout, you know, make sure you everybody's on the same page. And we kind of maybe just a little rushed out a little bit. But yeah, I agree with you guys on that. So,
all right. Thanks for the call, Jimmy.
Thanks. Yeah, and I get it. I mean, the problem is, and I get it, take a timeout.
Scored 31 points against the Titans. And really, the Jaguars game is the only true stinker of the season, right?
Right. Tennessee's a much better team. And you played them, you're going in for the winning touchdown. And taking a time, yeah, you can say that. Well, yeah, in hindsight, you obviously, if it didn't work what they were going to do, and you should have done the other thing or whatever, but it's a quarterback sneak. I mean, I don't know how much why you have to take a timeout to call that. You know what I mean? So it's not like it was a double reverse, you know, Billy special like they ran earlier in the game where, the toss with right. Dawson Knox throwing it with a busted hand. It's not a complicated play like that. It's like, guys, let's get a push. Let's go on one, you know?
Yeah.
And so, yeah, I get it. In retrospect, you wish you'd have done something different, but you know, no reason to think they're not going to be able to execute it. And indeed, they probably did, except for the fact that the ground gave way under Josh's feet.
That's right. We have to take a break here, but when we come back, it's that time of the week where we welcome in senior producer from NFL Films, one Greg Cosell, to break down the X's and O's of Bills Colts. He's coming your way next here on One Bills Live, presented by Kaleida Health. It's Buffalo Bills Radio.
Tasker, who has been all over the field.
Kind of unique. He was kind of a dual-role player for you.
Steve.
A balloon.
Steve. A blimp. We're not even in the stratosphere of normalcy. All right, here we are. Hour number two on a Friday, and you know what that means. That means senior producer from NFL Films, Greg Cosell, also co-host of the ESPN NFL Matchup Show, where they are going to be doing an in-depth segment, Steve, on one Jonathan Taylor. Greg, how deep in the weeds do you get on Jonathan Taylor with that segment?
Well, yeah, I actually do a piece on two of his zone runs. He's a predominant zone runner. That's the foundation of their run game. So he's been running pretty well. They have their offense starts pretty much with the run game. Should be a good matchup. You know, the Bills have a good run D. I think the Colts have to stay pretty committed to the run game unless the score suggests otherwise.
How has the Colts offense changed with Phillip Rivers out and Carson Wentz in?
Oh, well, I don't think it's changed dramatically, because if you go back to last year down the stretch, particularly, Steve, the last, six, seven, eight games, they were a run-first team. Taylor, I think, if you look at his numbers from that stretch, was carrying the ball on average probably about 20 times. I think the pass game might be a little different, but I think the foundation of what they're trying to get done is probably somewhat similar. Taylor, obviously, right now he's been getting, I don't know what his average number of carries per game is, but it's clear that's the foundation. The interesting thing that they do is they actually line up in a meaningful number of snaps every week with both Taylor and Nyheim Hines on the field at the same time in what many call a pony package. And that's been pretty effective as well, because Hines is kind of a movement player who can line up in all different positions, different areas in the formation. And it'll be curious to see, well, I guess from the Bills' perspective, it doesn't matter. I was going to say how teams match up, but we know what the Bills are going to do. They're going to play nickel. Bills would play nickel probably if a team lined up with eight tight ends.
Right. Yeah, and I think Taylor carries it about 19 times a game.
Actually, it's 16. Yeah. He's got 161 carries in 10 games. So
yeah, there
16
you go. 16
times a game.
Yeah. So yeah, yeah, yeah. It strikes me that this game is a rematch of the wild card game, as we've been talking about, but also. You got a Colts team that has dug out of a deep hole, won five of their last seven. And it seems, and we had Stephen Holder on, who covers the Colts for ESPN. This is a team that really used the first month of the season to find out who it was, because Carson Wentz was hurt. Quentin Nelson was hurt. A couple of their key players were hurt and couldn't play. They were finding out. They didn't have a preseason with those guys, and it took them a while to find themselves, and they lost games because of it. Is that right?
Well, I think that's fair, because keep in mind, even though Frank Reich knew Carson Wentz from Philadelphia, I think it's pretty fair to say that based on 2020 tape, that Carson Wentz was somewhat of a broken player. And they needed to find out what he could be and what he could get to. And without having much of a training camp due to the foot injury, they really didn't know that. So they had to use the first part of the season to find out what Wentz is. And I think he's settled in pretty well. I think they do a lot of play action. He's been very effective in the conventional play action pass game, meaning under center. I think for the most part, he's thrown the ball well. I think it's in his DNA, guys, that every once in a while he's going to make one of those plays that you shake your head. But he's not turning the ball over for the most part, and he's not getting sacked a lot, which was a major issue in Philadelphia. So I think you'd have to say that he's played well, not at the level of 2017, when many thought he was on his way to being a top two or three quarterback in the league. But you can line up and play with Carson Wentz, and he can make every throw, and he has enough movement to make plays. I'm sure you saw last week when that game against Jacksonville seemed to be in the balance a little bit. He made that second reaction movement throw running to his right with about 3 minutes to go to hit Michael Pittman, I think, for about 25, 28 yards. And here we're watching Jonathan Taylor, who is very good, by the way, in the screen game as well, as we're looking at. So they had to find out what Carson Wentz was and is, and he's played pretty consistently through the first – what is their record now?
They're 5-5.
Yeah, so they played 10 games. He's played pretty well through the 10 games.
Michael Pittman has effectively become their number one receiver. He's kind of supplanted T.Y. Hilton for that role. And he also leads the league in third down receptions. I don't know if you cut it this fine, Greg, but how have they made use of him on third downs? I realize the distance to gain factors into what play they're going to call. But what predominantly have they used Pittman on to get him the ball on that crucial down?
Yeah, Pittman is an intriguing player because he's big, he's physical. They like to use him quite a bit on crossers, shallow crossers, depending on the distance on third down. With that big body, he can run away from people because he has good speed and he can use his body. But, you know, again, I can't think of every kind of play, but Pittman is clearly their number one guy. I mean, he's, I guess he's had over 20 catches on third down, which is quite a bit, actually.
21,
his total number of catches, But he's a big body. He's a tough cover. I remember watching him coming out of college, and I thought he fit the profile of a boundary X perfectly because those guys often get man coverage. They get individual routes because often it's on the backside of trips and the coverage is more focused on three wide receivers. So you get a lot of man and you can get a lot of individual routes, isolation routes. He's equipped to do all that. And I think that, you know, he'll continue to get better as Wentz settles in, gets more comfortable, as the offense settles in and gets more comfortable.
What did we talked about this at length. What did the Bills, when they played the Jets this last week, and we're trying to figure out what might the Bills do offensively going forward, particularly with an offensive line that's being shuffled again. Under center last week against the Jets came out of nowhere for a lot of people. They went from being 90% shotgun to under center like 70% of the time, and certainly it had to catch the Jets off guard. But what did that do, and can you see it being a big factor going forward?
Well, that's obviously the question. You know, right. I guess we don't know the answer to that. But you know, turning on that tape and all of a sudden seeing Josh Allen under center, Gilliam playing, you know, 15 snaps, I believe, two tight ends playing 12 or 13 snaps, something along those lines. It looked like a philosophical change in their approach. They tried to run the ball more, obviously, out of, with Josh under center. We'll see if that continues. Obviously, it got them back on track. Many will say they beat a bad team. And obviously, the Jets over the last month have been historically bad on defense. But I don't think that's relevant to what the Bills are trying to get done. They needed to sort of get back on track. They thought that was the best way. I'm sure there were a lot of conversations early in the week after the Jacksonville loss, with the coaching staff and players. How do we want to go forward? Because there has been a little inconsistency in their offense this year. And as we've discussed, as good as Josh Allen is, it's just hard to put your quarterback in the shotgun and pretty much run your offense that way. Particularly, the other factor is the O-line. The O-line's had a lot of shuffling. It's not a great pass protection O-line. It's just too difficult to ask them to pass protect 40, 45 times with the quarterback in the gun. You need the run game element. You need the ability to move forward and be proactive as opposed to reactive. So I would think, I don't know if you'll see it as much, guys, but I think it'll start to become a meaningful part of what they do.
And not just going off of last week's game, but where do you come down on Brian Daboll on the creativity meter in terms of being willing to turn to things like this to get his offense right?
Well, I think it's a positive. Whether look, you're there, I'm not. I don't know whether it was his call or meetings with Sean and hey, we got to change some stuff. I can't answer that, but you know, I think that the run game, you can do more in the run game with the quarterback under center. You can do more in the play action pass game with the quarterback under center. And I'm talking about how it impacts the defense as well. I think that I would hope you'd see more of it. They were having a big issue getting the ball down the field. Last year, they made far more big explosive chunk plays in the pass game than they had made this year. Now, I don't know what the number is, but just watching the tape, it did not seem like they were making as many big plays in the pass game, and they need to find a way to do that.
Yep.
And I think going with Josh under center with the play action pass game, and I think his play action numbers were pretty much off the charts this week.
Right.
I'm sure. I think I remember looking them up and seeing it was
305 yards off play action.
Right. But I think when he was under center, I think he was 11 for 14 for 192 yards.
Right.
And prior to the Bills game, to the Jets game, he only had 32 pass attempts under center. And that was in 8 games. So this was a big change. I just think you can do more things. So we'll see. I know they want to keep running the ball and have it be a viable part of their offense.
Well, their front is going to be working against a defensive D line for the Colts. That's getting better. Quiddy Pay's playing better. Odeyingbo is playing better. DeForest Buckner's always a force. He's got 4.5 sacks, 45 tackles. You know, talk about the front of the Colts defense and what it might be looking at with a Bills offensive front in the shape it's in.
Yeah, and Steve, that's a great point because the Colts have a good front and they have a lot of depth and position versatility along their D line. Odenebo, who came out of Vanderbilt, he got hurt in his last year in college,
yeah. But
I really liked his tape. He is a big kid, long arms, athletic. He's in a central place, Tyquan Lewis, who's out for the year, and he can play D end, he can play D tackle. They move people around. They've got a lot of players who are capable. Muhammad can rush the quarterback. Teray can rush the quarterback, and he's also lined up inside as well. You mentioned Buckner. Obviously, he's a big-time player. Grover Stewart's a really good one-technique player who normally doesn't play in their sub-fronts unless it's first down, but he's a really good run defender. So, you know, they've got a lot of players. You mentioned Pay. I thought he really flashed last week as an edge pass rusher working from both sides. He's one of those guys that has the ability to initiate and then play off contact effectively with hand usage and leverage and strength. That's more of his game than just pure speed. But they're pretty deep on the front. It's the back end where they've struggled this year and had a lot of injuries.
Right.
And then looking at their secondary, Greg, I'm having a tough time figuring them out, especially looking at the numbers.
Yeah.
We know they're without their top two safeties. Both of them are on IR. So they've got veterans back there in George Odom and Andrew Sendejo, and their corners have had problems preventing big plays. I mean, they've given up 23 passing touchdowns. That's the most in football through 10 games. And
yeah.
Yet at the same time, you know, they're a team that is big on takeaways, more from fumbles than interceptions. But still, I'm trying to figure out which secondary is showing up on Sunday to play the Bills.
Yeah, well, you know, takeaways are an odd thing. But just in terms of talent, they got Rakia Sin back, I think, last week. He's been up and down. He played well last week against the Jaguars, but he's been up and down in his career. Obviously, Kenny Moore, he's one of the best slot corners in the league, so they're fine there. But, you know, as far as other corners, it's been a little bit of a struggle for them. You know, Carey's been around the league. T.J. Carey's been with a number of teams. You can line him up and play. He played outside. Rodgers played outside opposite Yassin. So they've been searching. I think Rhodes is due to play this week. Is he not?
Yes.
But I don't think he's the same player that he was.
No, I mean, so, he's got a high passer rating against. It's like 146.8 on deep balls. It's crazy.
Yeah, so, I mean, this is a very beatable secondary. Where they are good, of course, is their two nickel linebackers, Leonard and Okereke, are really, really good players. So that's where they are very good. But the back end, you know, you talk about the safeties. Sendejo, they, whenever they went to a single high, it was almost always Sendejo. And then they played Odom. They played some veterans who've been around. They played Jahlil Adai, who I think has been playing since 1975. and then they had Josh Jones, who actually came out of North Carolina State as a high-level traits guy, size, speed, movement. And it just hasn't worked out, but he's there now. So both Adai and Jones played snaps at safety with Sendejo last week because Sendejo played every snap.
What is the common denominator with the offenses that have had real success against the Colts? What do they do well consistently and the Colts really struggle with?
To give you the Cliff Notes version, Steve, throwing the ball. Teams have had success throwing the ball against this Colts defense because their secondary has been problematic. They feature three main coverage concepts. Cover one, which is, of course, man coverage with a single high safety. They play a good amount of cover two, and they play a good amount of cover three, which is the zone version with a single high safety. Now, they'll mix in some cover four, and they'll play some one robber, you know, depending on the situation. But for the most part, they play three main coverage concepts. They really will have to rely on their pass rush. They'll blitz on occasion. Kenny Moore is a really good blitzer from the slot. One thing they do is they will green dog. So if they play man and the back stays in, the linebacker, whether it's Okereke or Leonard, who has the back man in man coverage, if the back stays in to protect, that guy shoots and adds into the rush. He doesn't just stand there and cover grass.
But as you said, they're not a high blitz rate team generally.
No. Not relative to the league.
Yeah.
Correct.
Right.
So, you know, you see their pass rush is kind of gaining some traction.
The Bills
are going to have a shuffled offensive line. And the last time they had that line, Jacksonville got home early and often just rushing four. So,
yes.
You know, what might be some solutions for the Bills? They went to some more 12 personnel last week, and that helped in terms of holding up the protection. I'm curious what their solutions might be going forward. I didn't know if you had any theories or things they might be able to turn to there.
That's where I think you should see more Josh under center and the pass game working that way. Because think of it this way. Everybody always assumes that play action just impacts second-level defenders, meaning linebackers. But if you run outside zone play action, run action, which, of course, outside zone is a part of the Bills' run game, think about the impact on the defensive line. Their first move is lateral as opposed to vertical, rushing the quarterback. That helps your pass protection. So I think you're going to see more of Josh under center with the conventional play-action pass game. I really do. And I think you should. I mean, I'm not going to sit here and say I'm smarter than Sean or Brian Daboll, but I think that it's a good way to help an offensive line that's, again, being shuffled, which is a shame because I thought Spencer Brown played pretty well last week. He's really athletic, you know, for a guy that size, but he's obviously out this week. So, you know, I think that the play action pass game is really important. And I think I'd like to think we'll see more of it.
Right. And as this game gets closer and closer and these lineups get, it's a shuffled secondary for Indianapolis versus a shuffled offensive line for the Bills. And, you know, the COVID and the injuries for both clubs, who's going to be up and who's going to be down. Darius Leonard struggling with an ankle. He's been dragging around with a couple weeks, left the game last week for a minute, came back in.
And what's Edmund's status for this week?
Up in the air. He's limited today.
He practiced it on a limited basis today. So we're anticipating like a questionable designation, but we're just guessing.
Here's the problem, Greg, because if they play him Sunday, if he's healthy enough, okay, that's fine if he's healthy enough. But he's not. Is he going to get good enough in 3 days to play Thursday as well? The two games in 4 days is kind of an issue, I think, for anybody with an injury for the Bills as to how whether they're going to be healthy or not. And the COVID guys in particular.
Yeah. Do they have guys? The Bills have guys on the COVID list?
Yeah, Spencer Brown and Starlo Tulele.
Oh, okay. That's right, Brown. I saw that. I didn't know about Latulele. So neither one is playing Sunday,
we,
right?
We don't know definitively, but it would seem to be headed in that direction.
Right. Yeah, the one advantage they have is they have A.J. Klein. because A.J. Klein can line up and play. You know, a lot of teams have a major drop-off when you lose a player like Edmonds if he can't go. Obviously, Klein's not the same player, but you can line up and play with A.J. Klein.
All right. Listen, Greg, thanks very much. We look forward to seeing that Jonathan Taylor piece on the NFL matchup show on ESPN.
It's okay, Chris. You can say you don't really are looking that much forward to it since it's not on the you know, on the Bills.
Well, that's okay. I kind of want to know what they're in for, to be quite honest
with
you.
Well, Taylor's really a good back. He was my number one runner coming out 2 years ago when he came out. And I think that's proven to be the case.
Absolutely. Yeah.
Thanks, Greg. As always, Greg, for the insight. We'll look forward to talking to you next week.
All right, guys. Appreciate it. Thanks.
All right. That's senior producer from NFL Films, Greg Cosell, joining us here. We will take a break now because when we come back, we're going to be joined by the man calling the game for the NFL on CBS on Sunday. One Kevin Harlan joins us next here on One Bills Live, presented by Collider Health. It's Buffalo Bills Radio. Chris Brown, Steve Tasker with you, and we're bringing a man in whose voice is very familiar to everybody who listens to the NFL on CBS, but this is one particular call you may not have heard before, although most eyeballs and ears were on the Super Bowl, but maybe you missed this one or forgot about it. We thought we'd remind you.
Second down, 20, 5:03 to go. Someone has run on the field, some guy with a bra. And now he's not being chased. He's running down the middle of the 40. Arms in the air and a victory salute. He's pulling down his pants. Put up your pants, my man. Pull up those pants. He's being chased to the 30. He breaks a tackle from a security guard. The 20, down the middle, the 10, the 5. He slides at the 1, and they converge on him at the goal line. Pull up your pants. Take off the bra and be a man. And the players with hands on hips at the other end of the field are looking at him and shaking their head and saying, why, oh, why is this taking place in a Super Bowl?
Indeed, why is it taking place in a Super Bowl in what was reminiscent of a good old-fashioned pig scramble? Kevin Harlan called it better than an auctioneer, and he joins us now. And he's calling the game on Sunday between the Bills and the Colts. Hopefully there's no calls like that that you have to make, but you never quite know with Bills fans.
Yeah, it's great because you, Kevin, you did the national broadcast for Westwood One on the radio for the Super Bowl. You've done a ton of big games, and what kind of instructions do you get? I mean, you've got some pretty wide swath of leeway to handle it how you want, but why not just go with it like you did? And what an iconic call! It's never happened, right?
I don't know if you're ever going to be put in the right frame of mind when animals or drunks run out onto the field. But I would tell you that, you know, when you're doing radio, you're calling everything you see, and you're so deep in the weeds,
right,
with all the different things going on, substitutions at receiver and different alignments with the defense and everything else. And it just, you're like hypnotized almost, because you're just constantly doing the same thing. And this guy ran right through the formation and did what he did. And he ran almost, you know, free for about a minute. I mean, like, no one was chasing him. It was like, this is Super Bowl. And he's just out there running like a fool. And then we saw what happened at the end. I've done a couple of those, and they've been, you know, good natured. I wouldn't do it on TV. If I were doing TV, number one, we wouldn't show it.
Yeah, right.
On radio, you know, you can just let your words and your imagination take you where you want it to take you. So,
yeah.
But I think I've retired my calls about weirdos going on the field.
I do get it. I do completely get it, though. Because even when I was in the booth, you know, with CBS, and you know, we worked together as I was a sideline guy for you, and you get into the mindset of, particularly, and I've done some stuff for Howie at, you know, Westwood One as well. Radio's different because you have to give people a sense of what's going on and filter it through your own, but you got to paint the picture. And there's no pictures that you have to worry about because it is radio. And I think it's a different animal, and people really lose sight of the fact of how different it really is.
Well, you mentioned Howie Dendoroff is our executive producer. He's done like 33 Super Bowls for right. CBS Radio and Westwood One. So he is a legend in the business and never stopped me. And then I work with Kurt Warner, and Steve, you know Kurt. He's like,
right.
Like he's egging you on. So really it was more his fault than it yes. was mine. He kept going, yes. yeah, keep going. And anyway, but it's an honor to call those games. I would never want to stain the game or the league or anything like that. And I think people hopefully take it in the manner and with, how it was delivered. And it was the game, you know, it was 31-9, I think, at the time. So the game was all but down. And then this guy ran out on the field.
Yeah,
so,
well, yeah. You know, the game needed a little levity at that point.
You needed something.
There you go. So, and you provided it. So good on you. But thanks. let's talk about Bills Colts though. And this is a game that I think is underrated as a matchup because you've got a Colts team whose backs are against the wall in terms of wiggle room in staying in the playoff race with five losses on their record at this point in time. But they're, I think, an underrated football team also. Not that the Bills aren't aware of that. They played them to a field goal in a game that came down to a Hail Mary in the AFC wild card last year. The thing that I'm having trouble with, though, Kevin, is this. I can't figure out their pass defense. They've given up more passing touchdowns than any other defense in football with 23 in 10 games. But they're also second to the Bills in takeaways with that right. Colts defense. Which defense do you think shows up in Orchard Park for the Colts on Sunday?
I don't know. I'll have to go back and see if the majority of those were earlier in the season. They began 0-3. You know, they really right. struggled. Wentz had missed a lot of camp time and had a bad foot, and their offensive line wasn't what it is now. Nelson was out. I mean, they had a bunch of issues. And but they've been playing great, though, lately. Their quarterback, Wentz, has thrown, 17 touchdowns and 3 interceptions. They've got one of the best running backs in pro football. They've got an elite linebacker in Darius Leonard. I mean, they've got some wonderful right. parts. The Bills may be stronger top to bottom, though, and it may not matter. But, you know, Frank Reich going back there, those players know what it means. And I'm sure whatever ills they've got in the secondary, and they're facing one of the great passers in Josh Allen, certainly, they're going to have to be tied down back there. I mean, it's going to have to be the focus and lockdown defense, because there's no doubt that Josh and that offense, Brian Daboll, they see those numbers too. And
right.
I'm sure they'll probably go at them in some form or fashion. But this is a Colt team that I think is every bit of what last year's playoff team was that the Bills saw. I don't get sideways with their 0-3 start. Right. Look at what they've done recently at, you know, 4 wins in 5 games. But this will be a pretty good litmus test for the Colts. I think it's just the beginning for the Bills. I mean, they've got this is the beginning of a pretty tough 4-game stretch. So we're going to see the true colors of the Bills, I think, too, in the next month.
You bounce around the league. You cover all the teams in the league you for CBS and Westwood. Have you seen a season? Can you remember a season where it looked like and I keep going back to this, and Chris gets tired of me saying it. Like, at week 7, the Cincinnati Bengals were the 1 seed, and all of a sudden now yes. they're the 8, the 9 seed, the 12 seed. Then you get Baltimore, who looks like they're unbeatable, and the Miami Dolphins clip them. The Bills get taken out by the Jacksonville Jaguars. I mean, it's one favorite after another that gets knocked off in the AFC.
By under 500 teams.
Yeah, by sub-500 teams, and it all happened in 1 week as well. I mean, like 4 teams that were at or below 500 knocked off division leaders. So have you ever seen a season like this, and do you have a reason why maybe this year's like that?
I don't have a reason, and I don't think I've seen a season like this. And you guys have covered the league a long time, and Steve will tell you, having played so many great years, that the difference between a win and a loss sometimes is razor thin. A good team and a bad, is the difference is just a wisp. So you don't know what you're going to get, and that's the great thing about the NFL. But I would tell you this, if this is any indication of what the NFC and the AFC are like, week 18 could see as many as 22, 24 teams of the 32 still with a playoff possibility. I mean, I think it's going to be outrageous. But whether it's anything with the pandemic, whether it's anything with dealing with a shuffling roster, and I guess if I were going to be specific, you know, I've never seen these last 2 years more ups and downs with roster changes and starters out because of, you know, COVID or whatever, than we have these last 2 years. I mean, it's just thrown a completely different look into how teams line up on Sundays. And you just really don't know what you're going to get. We make these spotting boards for our broadcast, and Steve's done it for years. And by the time the PR guys come into our booth and tell us who's up and who's down and who's been given, you know, a pass today because of COVID or who's going to be brought off the practice squad, we're crossing stuff out and whiting out things and names, and it's a mess. It's like a jigsaw. You look at it, it goes, well, it was nice, neat, and tidy when I walked in the booth, and now it's all scribble and chicken scratch. So, right. Like, you can't even read it anymore. It's very weird, and that may be part of it. Like, we're going to see the right tackle change a bit this week for the Bills.
Yeah.
You know, we know Starr is not going to play. So, I mean, there are changes even for the best of the best like the Bills, and, you know, working around those changes. Now, listen, A.J. Klein plays last week and plays a terrific game at linebacker as he was filling in for someone. So you just never know, and it was Evans, you just never know what you're going to get. And I think coaches can coach and have these great weeks of practices, have the meetings, and everybody seeming focused. And one big play, like I did the Rams and Niners on Monday. Matthew Stafford, who's the hottest thing in the NFL, throws two quick interceptions, one a pick six against the Niners, who have, you know, just looked horrendous, losing 5 of 6, and they come out and beat them and squashed them. So you, that's the great thing about the NFL. The parity, I think, has built and built and built to the point now where on any given Sunday, anything can happen, and that's what keeps you at the edge of your seat.
Kevin, Steve and I have talked about this a good deal because we're talking Bills all the time here, obviously, but the Buffalo defense has been number one in the league, not only in total D, but in points allowed for several weeks now. And we're trying to figure out why it doesn't get more credit in terms of the national landscape. And some of what we've surmised is there really isn't a true household elite name on the unit. It's truly a group effort. It's a sum of the parts type of defense. Yes, maybe Tre'Davious White, having been a first-team All-Pro, is a recognizable name on this defense. But beyond him, it's really a collective effort with Leslie Frazier's group. I don't know, maybe since you're on the national landscape a little bit more than we are, do you have any theories as to why, you know, this defense maybe doesn't get the credit it deserves?
None. I don't know, because it's been a defense, as we well know, with history, with significant defensive parts that we saw during the four consecutive Super Bowls. I mean, you know, Bruce was a household name playing the edge rusher. So I don't think it has anything to do with market size. I think that the simplest explanation is usually the right one. And that's what you just said. It's a great collection of terrific players that play within their system. Can you name a single defender on the New England Patriots? You know, I mean, there's a couple guys that you might recognize because the Patriots have been who they've been and won a Super Bowl with a couple of those players. But for the most part, a bunch of no-name guys. There's no Richard Seymour or Harrison on that defense. I mean, again, and maybe that's what it's all about. Maybe it's about not having a star, but maybe it's about having a great collection of guys that are all moving in the same direction, on the same page, doing their job and following what that scouting report says they've got to do on Sunday. And I guess I would probably begin the conversation there. Listen, if they go on and have a spectacular season as they're putting together right now, I think when we get to the last week in December and January, when we're all voting for all pro and pro bowl guys, you're going to see some of those players, and not just Tre'Davious, but you're going to see other players going to get the recognition they deserve. So it's just probably a matter of time, but they're very, very close. And I would not take the shun from the national media of not circling, because I think you may have the MVP on your team in your quarterback. And so, you know, I people are well aware of the Bills. I think from an AFC standpoint, they're probably reluctant to let go of Mahomes and the Chiefs, even though they really don't have a big name guy. I mean, Matthew, perhaps, I don't know, but there's not like a signature defensive player that's a household name. Chris Jones is probably the best, but he's not played that well. He's all pro, but he's not played that great. And the defense is not that good. But the defense of the Bills, what, for 7-8 consecutive weeks, number one in the NFL. So I get your point, and you can't figure it out sometimes, but maybe it's the fact that they're just so, they're, as a body of work, they're so great that you can't pick out one or the other that is even better than another position, because they've all got a hand in every win they get every Sunday.
So you've seen as much football as anybody this year. I mean, in the midst of everything else you're doing, I mean, the NBA, and I mean, you're the busiest of bees in the beehive of sports. But so in your travels around the NFL, and you've seen a number of teams probably, is there a team that has surprised you this year about how well they're playing, or where they came a little bit out of nowhere, or that someone has stepped forward? I mean, you've got, I was just mentioning Cincinnati, how they've played, but there are 12 teams in the AFC alone that have 5 wins or better. They're at 500 or better. And with a 17 game schedule, you know, 9-8, 10-7 might be enough. Is there a team in there that has surprised you?
Well, you said it, I think, best, Steve, earlier on. You said, you know, every week there's a new team. It began with Kansas City, then it went to the Chargers, then Baltimore, then Cincinnati, and now Tennessee. There are many surprises, nothing shocking. I'm surprised that Tennessee is surviving without Derrick Henry, because he is the heart and soul of that team. And without him, you know, they've had to kind of reconfigure. I'm surprised at how rookies make such a big impact. The rookie receiver at Cincinnati, and the rookie quarterback at New England. I mean, coming in this league and having the kind of wherewithal they've had. Then again, you look at the college programs they came from, LSU and Alabama, respectively, and maybe you get a feel for, you know, those two programs prepare their players about as well as any two for the NFL. And so they don't open their eyes wider. They just, you know, grit harder, and they're in there, and they're just picking up where they left off in college. Because they're used to the biggest stage and the brightest lights. So I don't know that there really is a surprise. Stafford's last 2 weeks have been horrendous, and he's the first to admit it, yet he was the talk of the league for the first 5-6 games of the season. Mahomes struggling the way they have, and the Chiefs, you know, so like little stories like that probably have surprised me. Maybe the fact that the pandemic and COVID hasn't really grabbed any team by the throat, except for Aaron Rodgers missing a couple weeks ago for Green Bay, and really debilitated them. You know, you've got one on your defensive line you're going to miss, and then your right tackle. So you're going to be hit by it, it looks like, this weekend. I guess the narrative in this league, and I guess what we're trying to all say is the narrative in this league changes week to week. And that shows you how great the league is, and that truly every regular season game means something. There's always something in back of every win or loss each and every week. You can't say that in baseball. You certainly can't say it in the NBA and in hockey. But you can say it in NFL, and maybe more so in the NFL than even in college football, because you lose a game or two in college football, the playoffs are gone. Now we've got so many that have lost a game that it's going to be even. But a lot of times we got a lot of, you know, undefeated teams this deep in the season, and now you don't know, you know, what's going to happen. In the NFL, you know, Jacksonville can beat a powerhouse like Buffalo. You know, the Chiefs can lose a couple games and not have any kind of, you know, compass in the right direction. We can see Green Bay get whacked and Week one by New Orleans in Jacksonville, 38-3. Like, who can explain this stuff? Who can explain the Niners beating the Rams? So on a night they unveil Beckham and Von Miller. So, you know, that's what we love, the NFL, right? We love all the stories, all the twists and turns.
Kevin, thanks for giving us some time here. We know you got some travel to do. We look forward to seeing you up here on Sunday with Trent and Melanie to call the game. So thanks for the time. We'll see you on Sunday.
Thanks, Chris and Steve. I miss you, brother. Love you, and can't wait to see you Sunday in the broadcast booth.
Talk to you soon, man. Travel safe.
Thanks, guys, right. So much. Can't wait to get to Buffalo.
That's NFL on CBS play-by-play man Kevin Harlan joining us. Steve and I will take a break. We'll be back with more here on One Bills Live, presented by Kaleida Health. It's Buffalo Bills Radio. Welcome back to One Bills Live. Chris Brown, Steve Tasker with you. The Bills Friday injury report is out, and Cole Beasley and Matt Milano are good to go. They were limited through the course of the practice week, but both are going to be up and available on Sunday against the Colts. Tremaine Edmonds, as expected, listed as questionable after participating in practice on a limited basis today as he tries to return from the hamstring injury that kept him out of last week's game. Colts have not released their Friday practice report or injury status for Sunday's game as of yet. Frank Reich, in addressing the Indianapolis media earlier today, said right now everything's looking pretty good. He said he's hopeful that cornerback Xavier Rhodes and linebacker Darius Leonard will play on Sunday. Leonard is dealing with ankle and hand injuries, while Rhodes is trying to come back from a calf injury. Leonard did not practice Wednesday, was limited on Thursday, nothing yet for Friday. Rhodes was limited all week, and Coach Reich actually said that if Rhodes is good to play, he still will not have a full workload. They'll have a rotation, presumably with veteran T.J. Carey, who is not quite the cover corner that Rhodes
is. They're going through the exact same things the Bills are going through on their offensive line with their secondary. Yeah. Shuffling and guys plugged in.
It's that time of year.
Yeah, and COVID is another extra layer, degree of difficulty and layer of difficulty that everybody has to deal with as well, Bills included. So, yeah, it's a long season, and it's more complicated this year than it was last year. Do you agree?
You mean with the COVID?
Yeah.
Maybe.
It's certainly not less.
Yeah, I guess. I mean, there was no vaccine last year. You get hit with COVID, you're done for at least. You know what I mean?
And the thing we've always known is the thing's really contagious when you're not when we weren't vaccinated. So that's why everybody was staying at home for everything.
Yeah.
A year ago, now
people are out and about.
People are out and about, and it's you know.
We wanted to remind you the latest episode of our podcast, Bills by the Numbers, is out and available for you on all your podcast platforms, Google Play, Apple Podcasts, Spotify. You can even get it on the Bills YouTube channel and watch as well as listen. But Steve and I have tweeted the latest episode out, and it's a really good one, with the Bills atop the NFL in takeaways and near the top in big plays for and against. We talked with Super Bowl winning head coach Brian Billick, who invented the metric of toxic differential. And Steve killed it in the numbers game this week, so that's always entertaining.
I had a good week.
You did well.
Yeah, I had a good week.
Nailed it. So check it out. It's a worthy listen. It's real. Brian Billick's, he's still a sharp tack, man. I got to
tell you. Yeah, he had some interesting stuff to say about the way analytics taught him to coach his team different, ask his coordinators to coach their team different, have a different philosophy going into games.
How to put your game plan together based on what the
opponent
does.
It wasn't just about, like, we're going to go for it on fourth down here, or go for 2 points there, or whatever, or punt here, or try the field goal here. A lot of it had to do with the preparation leading up to the game. That's pretty insightful. It's fun.
Really great conversation with him. And then FanDuel, which sponsors our podcast, Make Every Moment More, they give Steve and I the opportunity to play their free game, High-Low, where we pick teams across four different statistical categories for this week, week 11, and every other week to see who's going to be high in sacks, low in sacks, who are we picking for high in points, low in points. So we always have fun with that. You should check that out as well. But really good podcast episode. We encourage you to give it a listen while you're waiting for Sunday's game to kick off. Bills by the Numbers.
Home game. Going to look forward to seeing everybody there. It's first game. It's the only game they've got in a month at home.
Pretty wild, huh?
Yeah. Yeah. It's been a while since they've had one, and it's going to be a while before they come back.
Yeah. And then, you know, and then another game 5 days later, 4 days later.
Yeah.
Thanksgiving night in New Orleans.
We will not be on the air for Thanksgiving, but we will be on Friday.
That is correct. But that's going to do it for Steve and I for this edition of One Bills Live. Steve will be on the post game on the streaming side on Bills Tonight with Matty Glab. I will be on the pregame side streaming
with Bill's Field Pass, which comes your way at about 12:05. We'll see you then.